I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, and it's a great pleasure to welcome my professional colleagues, Thaddeus McCotter, American Greatness, David Drucker, The Washington Examiner, John Fund of the National Review Online. Gentlemen, I immediately direct the puzzlement of the Democratic Party's initiative to increase the number of justices on the Supreme Court. The puzzle is this. The Democrats these last years have been very successful following polling. They have not moved against polling in any of their policy recommendations. In this instance, however, the polling is quite decidedly against the idea of increasing the number of justices from 9 to 13. Not only are the Republicans opposed, which is logical, but the independents are largely opposed, and even the Democrats have some dissent here, meaning that the polls are against Nancy Pelosi and her leadership. At the same time, she's interested in pursuing the infrastructure bill, and then also there is H.R. 1. So I begin with you, David. What is the advantage that the Democrats find in pursuing this talk of increasing the court, even though they know the polls are against them, even though they know it crowds the calendar? Good evening to you, David.
Good evening, John. And you have to remember that the base of either the Democratic or Republican Party does not care about the polls and does not care about advantage. They believe they should do what they want if they have the power to do so. They believe the country will be inherently better for it. And they're not very interested in playing the game of political tactics and not biting off more than you can chew, lest you lose your ability to do anything. Because there's always an election coming up and the voters might just reject you and give power to the other party. And so what we're seeing here is Democrats moving in the direction that they said they would toward the end of the fall campaign last year after Ruth Bader Ginsburg died and Trump was able to nominate a third justice and move the court decidedly. It was already a conservative court, but decidedly to the right. And there will be time as other justices age and end up retiring for this to shift the way it always does. But Democrats are very impatient, number one. Number two, they still feel like Republicans played unfair in refusing Barack Obama's final court pick because it was the final year of an election, but then moved ahead with Trump's final court pick in the year of an election. But to tie this up in a bow, you asked very good questions about advantage, but this has nothing to do with that. And I think Democrats still believe that given the internal friction going on in the Republican Party and the fact that the Republican Party's polling overall from a brand perspective isn't that great, that they believe that these polls are not necessarily determinative of what would happen if they follow through with this. I think Nancy Pelosi knows better, which is why she said this bill that is in the House Judiciary Committee is not going to receive a vote on the floor.
Mr. Fund, increasing the number of justices in the Supreme Court is a dramatic idea. However, there has been the suggestion this was never meant to come to fruition. Instead, it's a message to John Roberts, don't get out of line. Is that too cynical, John, or does the Supreme Court read the notes in Politico?
Well, there's historical precedent for this, John. You'll recall that Franklin Delano Roosevelt did try his court-packing plan in the spring of 1937. It was met with fierce resistance, including by some Democrats on Capitol Hill. But within weeks of announcing that court-packing plan, Justice Harlan Stone, who had been appointed by Herbert Hoover and was a stalwart conservative striking down New Deal legislation, committed what it was called a switch in time that saved nine. He shifted his vote to uphold various Supreme Court New Deal measures. It became a 5-4 court the other direction. So FDR lost the battle, but progressives won the war in 1937.
Thaddeus, you have a question for our professionals.
Yes, gentlemen, there's a bipartisan quote-unquote commission set up by President Biden. You would expect that would report out that, yes, there needs to be some type of balance on the Supreme Court, i.e. new seats. Why didn't the Democrats wait for that process to reach fruition and then drop the bill and then go on the messaging offensive?
David?
Well, political parties and politicians never operate as logically as we might think they would. And I just think this is a case where Democrats are itching to try and get this thing done, particularly with a midterm election staring them in the face, in which they're likely to lose their majority and the ability to move any bill. And I don't think it's any more complicated than that. I also think that they probably want to put pressure on Joe Biden. I mean, if you're a Democrat that has watched Joe Biden's career and watched him in this campaign, then what you should think is that he has no interest in packing the court. It would go against his desire to lower the political temperature in the country. He can be liberal on fiscal spending bills because there is a desire for that in the electorate, even if there isn't a desire for that among Republicans in Congress. But the minute he starts changing the makeup of the court, a lot of the argument for his candidacy that he ran on starts to disappear. He knows that. And this is something that he never would have proposed if he wasn't faced with the Supreme Court nomination in the final month of his campaign. And so I think a lot of this is to pressure him to see if they can get him to go somewhere that he doesn't really want to go.
John?
I agree completely. This is not on the top of Biden's list of priorities. But the left is feeling it's settled. It thinks that it has history on its side. It thinks that the only obstacle to a progressive future is the one remaining branch of government that they do not have nominal control over, the Supreme Court. And they believe that this will energize their base and put pressure on Biden in other areas. And so far, as we've seen in the asylum retreat, the humiliating retreat of the White House on the cap of people admitted to this country under the asylum label, the left knows it can roll Biden, and it just did.
I go to your article, John, about Mr. President Biden seeking to be the progressive's progressive, perhaps matching FDR and LBJ together. The border is a crisis. The president has not been clear that he wants to face that crisis, nor actually dispatch the vice president to face the crisis. Does that put him at risk of being the progressive's progressive, the fact that he cannot resolve the undocumented in this country, millions of undocumented, and the expectation that up to 2 million will encounter the U.S. authorities along the border this year?
The border is, of course, an issue in which the Democratic base is extremely interested. This is part of their long-term strategy for demographic change in the electorate. And they believe that it's an issue that does have some short-term political costs. But at the same time, they cannot retreat. They believe that the damage would be in states like Texas, New Mexico, California, with the possible exception of Arizona, and they can withstand those losses, and they have to keep that part of their coalition on board, what I would call the pro-immigrant coalition.
David, this does undermine one large case the Democrats made against Mr. Trump, that he won't deal with immigrants. Mr. Biden won't deal with immigrants either, or is this early days for you, David?
Well, I think the final verdict has yet to be written here on Biden's record with immigration. As I've said before, he's in a box canyon sort of his own making. On the one hand, he ran it as a president who was going to be more compassionate when it comes to dealing with immigrants, both legal and illegal. And that position generally served him well. But when he moved to lift elements of Trump's border security policy deemed not very compassionate, he's dealing with the consequences, which is a border surge, which requires him to deal with more illegal immigrants. And he's having trouble dealing with them compassionately because of the challenges that come when you have a border surge and you have to process millions of asylum cases or millions of people that just want to come here. And he hasn't figured out yet how to square that circle. And so I think the question is going to be over time. And sometimes Biden gets a slow start and then he gets his footing. And other times things completely get away from him. Over time, can he figure out a way to undo what Democrats believe were the most onerous elements of Trump's immigration policy, specifically dealing with border security, while still not inviting the crisis that doing so far has invited?
That is.
Do you see that happening anytime soon, David? I mean, there is a certain time crunch given the midterm election coming up next year.
I, as a rule, never see anything good coming on immigration policy ever because it requires bipartisan cooperation. And even in areas where the two parties have gotten together in a crisis to deal with things, whether it's the pandemic or national security policy on occasion, we have never in 20 years really seen them able to deal with immigration policy. And every time something happens, it tends to be either one party going it alone or a president going it alone with executive order.
John?
Immigration will remain the great unsolved problem because, unfortunately, the Democrats believe that it must be handled with what they call a comprehensive approach. Comprehensive approach because that also must include their goals of naturalizing many of these illegal immigrants. It also includes changing the basic structure of the population of some states, and Republicans are loath to get around that. There are elements of immigration that could be solved, guest worker programs. The House even passed a bill with some Republican support to make it easier to hire people for farm laboring work. But that's a very small part of the problem. The immigration bill should be in 7 or 8 parts, just like the Biden infrastructure bill should be in 7 or 8 parts. But Democrats, in order to placate all of their coalition partners, have to pass large, comprehensive bills that don't survive scrutiny if they're on the legislative floor too long.
John Fund of the National Review Online, David Drucker of the Washington Examiner, Thaddeus McCotter, my colleague and co-host of American Greatness. When we come back, trillions and trillions and trillions. I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, CBS Audio Network.